Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Hello, you are listening now to Zed Games, Australia's premier video game radio program. My name is Razor, joining you as usual, and with me, Miss Candy Payne.
Hi. I'm taking up all of the space in the studio tonight. There's no one else.
Yes.
It's quite nice.
Zed Games regulars Lee and Jody are very conspicuously absent.
Yeah.
Shame on them.
Shame on them, but whatever. I've spread out. I've got three seats to myself. It's like when you come home on a flight and your whole row is empty and it's just glorious. Yep.
But that's not going to stop us from putting on a cracker of a show. We have digital artist Alinta Krauth joining us later in the program. She's got an exhibition coming up later in the month at the Queensland Poetry Festival, so we'll be talking to her about all sorts of interactive arty goodness.
Yep, gaming goodness.
Also, our Southern correspondent Jess Mercer has been at GammaCon, which is a pop culture and gaming convention. But Miss Candy Payne, would you like to kick this episode off with the week in gaming news headlines?
Ooh, sure, there's no one else, so I may as well. Virtual reality pioneer Oculus has acquired Pebbles Interfaces, an Israeli company working on advanced 3D hand sensing technology. The impressive tech uses a combination of cameras and sensors to create a 3D model of your hands. The virtual hands can then be used to pick up and manipulate 3D objects as though they were your own hands. A demonstration showed remarkable accuracy when replicating complicated gestures, even when hands were overlapped or fingers were interlocked.
That's pretty awesome.
This is all kinds of robot amazingness.
The couple of times that I've used virtual reality headsets, you kind of look down and you're surprised not to see your body.
Yeah.
You wave your arms around and you're surprised not to see your arms. So.
Yeah, and that's funny because when you're watching people wearing the headset as well, the first thing they're all doing is just standing there looking down at their feet as though something's missing. But people just literally stand there for ages just looking down and looking around. And so I think this is going to be great.
Yeah, it looks like the Kinect done right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say that.
The Kinect done right. The Kinect done more accurately at this point in time. A joint study by the University of New South Wales and Miami University in Ohio has found that men who harass women while playing online games are more likely to be, quite literally, losers. The researchers found that while men of differing skill levels tended to act cordially towards each other, the male players who made harassing or provocative remarks toward female players were more likely to be less skilled at the game. They also found that players who were skilled at the game were more likely to pay compliments to players of either gender. Lead researcher Michael Kasimovich said, "As men often rely on aggression to maintain their dominant social status, the increase in hostility towards a woman by lower status males may be an attempt to disregard a female's performance and suppress her disturbance on the hierarchy to retain their social rank."
That's interesting, Candy.
I found it really interesting. Maybe not surprising, I've got to say.
Yeah.
It's not like it hit me in the face like, whoa, brand new information. It was just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it doesn't excuse that kind of disgusting behavior, but it's interesting that there's a kind of primal rationale behind
it. Primal aggression behind it.
You know, like a pack mentality or something. It's a bit foolish.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I like it. Mojang has secured a director for the Minecraft movie currently in pre-production. Rob McElhenney, creator and star of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia TV show, will direct the film, which was announced early last year. McElhenney, perhaps better known as Mac, also because I can't pronounce his name too well, will be joined by Lego movie producer Roy Lee.
I don't really think we need a Minecraft film, but
What is it actually going to look like?
I mean, well, you saw the Lego movie.
Yeah, so is it just going to be like Lego, but even more stunted-looking blocks?
Yes.
It's already blocky in Lego. What is Minecraft going to offer that's, you know?
Well, it has a built-in fan base of millions. That's something.
Well, yeah, that's great, but it's blocks.
Kids love it. So
oh, I'm sure they will.
It's just money in the bank, man.
Kids love it because it's interactive. I actually don't know how this will go down as just something kids have to sit there and watch.
Yeah, but do you watch It's Always Sunny?
Yeah, totally an adult show. It's hilarious, but it's for adults.
Why that guy? I mean, I love Mac. He's great.
Anyway, yeah, we'll see.
This is Zed Games. My name is Razor, joined, as always, by the lovable Miss Candy Payne.
Aw, thanks. Lovable.
Our next guest is a digital artist. Her name is Alinta Krauth, and she has an exhibition coming up at the end of the month at the Queensland Poetry Festival. Alinta, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ooh. So, digital art.
Yes.
It's not a word that I hear that often. Can you tell me more about it?
Well, I guess what I do lots of different styles of art, and the reason why it's just lumped into digital art is because they all are kind of digital. But I do a range of things from sort of projection art to taking things like poetry and literature, which is what I sort of started off in, and trying to bring that into a visual space. And obviously using games and using game making programs is a really easy way to do that because you've got the visuals and the sounds and the text.
And this exhibition that you've got coming up at shortly is actually it's a game that we actually saw 8 or 9 months ago at the Game On, wasn't it?
The Game On Symposium.
That was it. And so we saw you there, and I remember sitting down at this game, which I knew nothing about, with the title of An Argument in Parallel Incompleteness, and there was lots of bright colours, and I was a fruit bat moving around the screen and bumping off words and listening to sounds and people saying the words and reading poetry, and that was kind of the game, but you probably have a way better way of actually describing what people come in and do.
Oh, not necessarily. Well, basically the piece, it started off as a poem. It was actually a poem that I wrote probably about 5 years ago, and I sent it out to a couple of different places to get it published, and nobody wanted it. So I obviously thought that I'd done something clever, and nobody else thought that. So I thought, okay, I need to reimagine this. So I took that poem, and it's about a couple who are also mathematicians, and they're having an argument. Mm. So it's got all these mathematical words in it and so on, but it's also quite abstract and quite surreal. So it's going to mean different things to different people, which is kind of what I like about it in a game sort of scenario. Mm. So basically it's quite simple in that it's a 2D sort of platformer style game, but each of the levels is really different, and each of the levels sort of represents a paragraph from the poem. And you play this little fruit bat, mainly because I like fruit bats, but also it's sort of this innocent character that's sort of caught between these two worlds, and you just kind of fly around bumping into things, and rather than, you know, having explosions and so on go off, you're having explosions of niceness, explosions of poetry, explosions of other visuals and so on going off.
So he's kind of battling his way through like word and poetry barriers.
Yeah, and I guess the idea is you just sort of take your time in each level and really just explore the world and look around. There's not really, because a lot of people play it and then if I happen to be there, they turn to me and they sort of go, oh, how do I do it? Am I doing the right thing? Am I going the right way?
that was me.
And I sort of say, no, it doesn't matter which way you go, you know, just kind of look around and explore.
Mm. That is something that I found really interesting, because I was one of those people at Game On that sat there, and I was just kind of, I was engrossed for a good 15 minutes sitting there and just looking at it and trying to work it out. And then in my head, like, all of the gaming rules and conventions were telling me that I was doing something wrong, or, you know, I wasn't playing it properly because I was going up, down, left, right, all around in circles. And then I was hitting things I'd already hit, and then I didn't think I was advancing to another level. And I was like, well, if I'm not leveling up, what am I doing? What am I getting? And it was just the weirdest thing to sit there for. And then I realized, though, that was almost the point, because I'd sat there for so long trying to take it all in my own head that it was really interesting, just, and hard, I guess, for like longtime gamers to probably get out of that. You've got to be going in a certain direction, or there has to be a point, you know, you've got to find a flag, or you've got to like get to the next level, or rescue someone, or whatever it is.
And in a way, I think that sort of opens it up to a new audience as well, because if you have people who aren't necessarily versed on, you know, how to play games, but you just say to them, well, you know, here's some buttons, just press them, then it gets people that aren't necessarily digitally literate into that world, and it helps them to sort of be able to, I don't know, not necessarily get creative, but be able to feel safe and okay in that sort of world.
Yeah. Is this a game that people can, I mean, I keep using the word game, that's just a habit of mine, but it's kind of more of like an interactive poetry gaming experience, sort of. Like, it's really
art than game,
isn't it? It's more art as well. Yeah,
games,
there's so many words.
Games are products, essentially, although they may contain artistic elements. But what you do is you kind of use the gaming... you just pick and choose, like, what you like from the gaming world and then make art, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think of it as a game just because I made it in a game creation program. Mm. But really, I've only done that just to use those interactive elements, you know, to have sounds in there and to have people be able to explore. But I suppose you could call it an artwork, you could call it a piece of digital literature, which is a sort of a niche area that sort of sprung up in the last couple of decades. But I think one really good thing about having it as a piece of art is that rather than just let it go straight to an app store, I've been sending it out to all these different festivals. So, of course, there's the Queensland Poetry Festival, but it's, you know, it's been overseas at different festivals, and it's been in some other festivals in Australia as well. And the thing about that is once an art game becomes a site-specific installation, it can change. You can make the decision as to how people interact with it. So sometimes I've had it on a big, you know, 10-meter-long wall on a giant screen, or sometimes it's just a normal screen with people on a normal keyboard, and sometimes I've used reactive ink to make paintings, which are actually the buttons, and so people are pressing a painting and actually moving the piece around. And I also am really interested in making sort of bespoke controls, mainly out of old arcade game controllers and that kind of thing. So you can really change the way people interact with it without using things, fancy gesture-based things like Kinects and Leap Motions and so on. You can still kind of do cool things with slightly older technology and bring that into a new era, maybe?
So when we first saw it, it was just set up on the PC keyboard and mouse, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you've said you've sent it around the world. What's been the reaction, and what was your favourite setup and, I guess, feedback from people with that particular setup?
I guess my favourite setup at the moment would be the touch canvases, the paintings, just because I like that idea of traditional versus new sort of mashed together.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of an easy way of bringing some sort of traditional elements of art into this kind of world. But one of the things is if you send it overseas and you don't send yourself overseas with it, you're kind of trying to tell people how to set it up from afar, and you can sort of get a little worried about that. But I like when I show the work locally so that I can see people's reactions to actually playing it. There's something sort of strangely stressful about watching someone else play your game, but also sort of nice to get the feedback at the same time. That's what's going to be happening at Queensland Poetry Festival, is I'm going to be there trying not to listen while people are playing.
Very cool. Does it have an ending? Like, do you eventually just get
to
knocking through all the barriers and then you get to see the poem in full?
No, you don't get to see the poem in full. But there's about 6 levels, and each level is really very different, which was a choice of mine, because you know how with a lot of games, each level can be quite similar, except it's harder. Whereas I wanted each of these levels to be a separate world. So once you get to the end of the levels, I thought about the idea of, you know, because people that play games like to have a big reward. So I thought about the idea of having some kind of big explosion at the end, and then I thought, you know what, no, stuff it. So you find the last exit, and then that's it.
Would you be open to putting an explosion in at the end if audiences react poorly?
No.
That's good, because you should never compromise as an artist.
I would be open to writing the words "the end" at the end, but at the moment it doesn't even have that.
Wow, that's interesting. Have you watched people get through to that part and then wonder if it's done?
No, because you can tell it's done when it's no longer going. but usually I seem
common sense 101. Yeah. It's not on the screen anymore, so it's finished.
Yeah, I seem to still, if I'm there watching, I seem to still have to point out the obvious. And once people get to the end, I'm like, that's the end. Yeah. It's over now. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see that.
Has it travelled to any country where English was not the first language?
Oh, how many Hispanic speaking people are there in America? It's been to America.
Yeah, no, that's but a good point. I'm just wondering then, because it is, you know, English, yeah, an English poem, so I'm just, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think it has, no, but the interesting thing about that is that actually when I made it, I was under the assumption that nobody was going to bother to actually read the poem within it. I thought they were going to play, they were going to look at the visuals, they were going to focus on their own interactivity, and they weren't actually going to care about the poem anymore. Mm. But then the times that I've been watching people play it, actually particularly seeing children play it, they're really keen on sitting there and reading it. Mm. Which is interesting because I sort of purposefully made it a little bit hard to read because I thought, oh, no one's going to do that anyway. It's not the poetry isn't going to be the central part of this.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to get that feedback that the poetry still is actually really important.
Mm. It is, yeah, it is interesting because I'm thinking of the little bat flying around, and I remember how many times I've bumped into something and then I would get the same phrase over and over and over, and then it was really interesting because I was there trying to piece it together, thinking maybe that was the point and I needed to get through the poem from start to finish, and then I thought, well, maybe I just interpret these sentences kind of as my own poem and my own story, or like maybe it was different for everyone. So
yeah, and I think that's the thing about having it as, because it's a one-player thing, and so it's really sort of your interaction with it. You kind of get involved in this world and you no longer have to think about the outside world, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been talking to Alinta Krauth, who's a digital artist. Now, Alinta, your exhibition, An Argument in Parallel Incompleteness, is showing at the Queensland Poetry Festival, which is running August 28th to 30th. When is your particular exhibition open?
Yeah, so my piece is actually just on Saturday, the 29th of August, and it's between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. in the screening room of the IMA, which is the Institute of Modern Art. Mm-hmm. It also happens to be on some other places if you're interested. It's at the Marucci Music and Visual Arts Festival, which is the 22nd of August, if people have tickets to that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also, it's up for an award, actually, called the Sunshine Coast Art Prize, the winner of which will be announced in a couple of months. But there's a New Media Art Finalists exhibition, which is running through October, November, up in Maroochydore. So,
oh, there you go, guys. So check that out around. If you want to see potential winner of this New Media Art Award. Yeah, good luck. That's pretty
so
exciting.
If you want tickets to the Queensland Poetry Festival, you can go to queenslandpoetryfestival.com. And Alinta, do you also have a website with your stuff there?
Yes, I do. I have www.alintakrauth, which is K-R-A-U-T-H.com. My website, I think it looks terrible, but all the stuff's there.
The important stuff's on. Yeah. That's all that matters.
And in this piece, it's not actually yet available for download on app stores, but one day.
Yeah, otherwise come and play it in person. It sounds like there's loads of fun cultural things happening around Queensland at the moment, so check it out before it ships off overseas again.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, awesome. Alinta. You're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z 102.1 FM. Now, our southern correspondent from the Canberra region, Jessica Mercer, attended Gamacom earlier this year. It's a pop culture and gaming convention. She had a chance to speak with some independent game developers, including Cardboard Keep, Shy Kids Club, and Siege Sloth. So we've got some interviews to play for you about those guys talking about their games. The first one with Morgan from Cardboard Keep.
Okay, I'm here with one of the developers from Cardboard Keep. We've got Morgan here. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That's okay. So we're here at Gamacon and they're showing off their game Warden Melody of the Undergrowth. So can you tell me what Warden is all about?
Sure. So in Warden you play as two children, both of whom are lost in the forest, and they're trying to find their way home. And along the way they get caught up in this conflict between the spirits of the forest and the human empire, and they end up having to resolve that and bring about a new world order.
And you told me earlier that it was kind of a mix between Zelda and Banjo-Kazooie. Can you tell me how it's similar to those two games?
Yeah, so we all grew up playing Zelda and Banjo-Kazooie and other games like that, so they really stuck with us as just classics of really, really good, really good gameplay and storytelling. In terms of our game, there's a lot of Zelda in the combat and in the puzzling, and even to some degree in the level design. But then with Banjo-Kazooie, there's a lot of collectibles, and we wanted to kind of capture that frustration, but also that excitement that comes with the collectible system.
And so is this game very story-driven or more adventure-focused?
Look, I'm the writer, so I'm going to say, yes, it's story-driven. so we've developed a full story that encompasses both the playable characters in separate roles and then about them having to choose alliances amongst the forest.
Mm-hmm. And will there be any multiplayer included?
At this point, we don't plan to, no.
So how long have you been developing this game?
So we started developing in October 2013, which makes it about 20 months at this point. So coming up on 2 years.
Yeah. And what kind of changes have occurred over this time period?
The first build we ever made was just a little man running around on an island with a couple of boxes to jump on. And we've come a long way since then, but we've gone through a number of changes. We did plan to have some very different elements in the game that once we tested them, we realised they didn't quite fit what our vision was. So it's changed quite a lot along the way, but it's also been a really positive change.
And I played this earlier at iFest as well. Have you been taking the feedback from the audience playing it and incorporating it?
Absolutely. It's been wonderful to see people engage with it so much that they do want to give us feedback. And so we've tried to act on that feedback whenever we can.
And at GammaCon, is everybody enjoying it? Or?
We haven't had anyone walk away disappointed yet, which is really good.
Okay, so when are you planning it for its release and what platforms?
So we're going to be releasing on PC, Mac and Linux later this year. So ideally by around November. And then we're releasing on the consoles in early 2016. So that'll be Xbox One. And then we're currently registered as developers with PlayStation and the Nintendo Wii U.
Awesome. Thanks for talking to you, Morgan.
Great. Thanks very much.
So I'm here with Nicole, and she's from a Shy Kids Club, and she's presenting her game, The Incredible Journey of You and I. Thanks for having me, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
So why is your game called The Incredible Journey of You and I?
Well, I guess basically because it's a two-player game and you have to work together. And basically you're on a journey to figure out why your planet's been under attack by these weird aliens that have come crashing down. And yeah, we just wanted it to be about the two people playing together, like you and I kind of thing. So, yeah. And we like long, complicated titles for some reason. That would be a bit interesting. So.
So the gaming mechanics are really interesting. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah, so basically the world's made up of air and water. For some reason the water's sort of like up in the air and everything, so it's all a bit complicated. So basically you've got this ship, and one half of it is the water player's ship. So when you're in water, it will take control of where you fly. And the other half of the ship is the airship. So when you're in the air, the airship player will control the ship and the water player will be able to shoot, and then when you go into the water it'll flip over and then the water player will be able to control the ship and then the air player will be able to shoot. So basically the colour of the bullets change with the player.
Yeah, according to which player is shooting.
Yeah, and then the monster's eyes colour relates to the colour of your bullet as well. So you have to take turns figuring out who's got to shoot what monster and all that kind of thing. And yeah, that's basically how it works. And then you use that to figure out how to work, figure out little puzzles on the way through the
The puzzles are a bit basic, you know, at the moment.
Yeah, so definitely.
Yep, and I'm wondering how do they, I guess, what's your plans to expand it?
We definitely want to figure out how to make the environments more interesting and make the players have to figure out how to get their way through. And we've got a few ideas drawn out, but we've only been working on this game for a couple of months at the moment, so we just thought we'd throw in a puzzle, just see how people went with that, and then we can build on that from now on.
The art style is very cutesy, kind of like Adventure Time.
Yeah, a lot of people have done that.
Yeah. Why did you pick this art direction?
I think I just really love cartoons, and I've been making comics for a while as well, so I just kind of get drawn to the kind of cutesy, silly, kind of humorous kind of looking stuff.
Cool. And are the kids, like, attracted to it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, a lot of kids are like, oh, what's that? And then they try and play it, and they're like, this is really hard. But not too hard. They seem to enjoy it anyway.
So I guess, why did you decide to work on it, like, as a multiplayer kind of game?
That was actually my partner's idea. When we first started just talking about making games, he was really set on making a co-op two-player game where you both are really important to the part. You know, because sometimes it's a bit lopsided, like, one person has all the shooting kind of thing, and then the other person sort of just flies around. And so we wanted it to be really even. Both players had equal amounts to do, and
a beautiful balance between them.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So I guess it's still very early on.
Very early, yes.
So you don't have a release date or anything?
We are hoping for late next year, or just any time next year would be cool. We're trying to keep the scope quite small, just to make a nice story and get a lot of puzzles in there and not adding too much fluff or anything like that, and keeping the mechanics quite simple. So, fingers crossed we do get it done late next year. You never know.
And what platforms are you planning it?
For now, just PC. And maybe if it does all right and it does get well received, then we could look towards Xbox and PlayStation. But with our limited resources at the moment, it's just PC.
Cool, that's awesome. Well, thanks to talk.
I'm here with Trev, who's one of the developers at Siege Sloth, and they're presenting their game Evergreen today. So, can you tell me what your game Evergreen is about?
So, the game, you're growing the world's first tree, and over the course of millennia, you can affect how history plays out. You lure life out of the ocean, you watch the dinosaurs rise and fall, you watch humanity evolve, and through subtle interactions with the environment, you can change the course of history.
Cool. And how many different types of trees can you create?
The combinations are limitless. There's hundreds of different combinations that you can make. You can make it look like a pine tree, a fir tree, a willow. The possibilities are endless.
So, I'm assuming there's no story at all in this. It's more just you're creating, it's sort of like Minecraft in a way.
So, we have a very light story, which isn't actually portrayed through the demo. We've got a bit of Norse mythology mixed in there. They have the myth of the mystical world tree Yggdrasil, which connects the nine realms. You play as like a seed from Yggdrasil that's come down to Earth and is trying to start life.
Cool. And I guess what is the thing that keeps people like playing the game, like achievements-wise?
Each level has a series of goals, small tasks for you to fill. Every time you complete one of these goals, you unlock new decorative elements for the tree, different kinds of leaves, different barks, as well as allowing you to progress further through the game as you complete them.
Cool. So what are these types of... Can you give me some examples of these types of elements?
So you get different different flowers, be able to grow different fruit, different bark types, which can affect the stability of your tree, all kinds of things.
And if you grow your tree wrong, can it just all fall down?
Yeah, definitely. We've turned down the physics for today for showing up at this convention, but if you don't grow any roots and your tree has no stability and it's likely to fall over, if you grow branches that are too long in one direction without the support, they'll snap off.
And then you have to start all over again.
You do, but by them falling over, that provides nutrients to the soil, which allows other plants to grow around you. So
how have people been enjoying it today?
So far, pretty good. It's still early in the day, but our reception so far has been excellent.
Cool. And what's your target audience?
We're aiming for a very casual market, the same kind of audience that you'd see for Animal Crossing or The Sims. But we've also got the educational aspect of the game, where it is actually teaching history. So
what would be your favourite part of the game?
Favourite part? I really like level 2. Level 2 is you luring animal life out of the ocean. So you help this one little fish as it's being chased by a predator fish. You scare off the predator by dropping a branch on it, and that allows the little fish the time to get up onto land.
Awesome. So when and what platforms will you be releasing it on?
We'll be releasing it late this year to early next year. We're initially releasing on Steam, although after that we're looking at releasing it on mobile.
Okay, cool. Thank you for having me, Trevor.
Not a problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jess, for those interviews. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Zed Games. Razor Aww. And Candy signing out. Yeah. But it's been good to have your company. We'll be back next week at the same time. We'll catch you guys next week.
Awesome. Bye.